Thank you very much. And I would I've been given the difficult job of sort of reflecting on the 2 days. What a great 2 days we have had. Everybody agrees? The information sharing, the knowledge sharing here has been outstanding and most valuable. Where to begin? I'll begin at the end because I did not take notes at the very last moment, but I'll begin there just to say that later in the summer, I'll be speaking to the American Ophthalmologists Associations and some of those very points that you have raised with regards to care through telemedicine, which is what it is. We will be discussing some of that because getting that service using linking developed countries and providing telemedicine into developing countries using the iPad or using the office is something that we will be exploring further and needs to be explored further. And in ophthalmology, it's one of those areas we can do a lot of testing using that area in eye health. Eye health, as you probably know, is one of my areas that I continue to advocate for in my spare time, having founded the United Nations Friends of Vision, and developed having led the resolution on eye health for all, which forms part of the 2030 agenda. So we continue to advocate with the ophthalmological community globally, the International Agency for Prevention of Blindness, and their members and friends as we work together in that area. There's a lot to cover. And yesterday, of course, the whole discussion on inclusion and co-chairing, collaborating, and right down to today's work. I want to sort of take it in some sort of order following the 2 days because there was so much. But there was one theme that seemed to come through all the sessions just about, and the theme that I want to emphasize more and more is the whole area of not just waiting for blind and partially sighted persons and to be end users and then give it a product and have to then retrofit because you didn't do something, but starting from the ground up. The collaboration for inclusive design must mean starting from the ground up. We have to work together from innovation to the delivery of the product. I think that's, if we leave here with anything, that's the main thing, that those of us involved, we have to see the product in a universal context. There is a market, and therefore we can't scale up or specialize equipment more than the numbers that we have. But we can make the equipment, if we do it on using universal design, make the equipment suitable for the market for everybody. And the result of that is far more superior. And I want to draw on the presentation before, and I was speaking to the colleague, the good lady from BBC, and I wanted to and we talk a lot about specialized audio description equipment. In sports, when we have moved away from truly descriptive sports commentary to a model that fits only for visually impaired, for people who can see, So much of the commentary you get in sports are built for YouTube video or built for television. And I am a sports enthusiast, and I go to cricket and football. And I know there are specialized arrangements in special rooms with special commentators, but I guarantee you that it's far more expensive than if the commentary itself, from the very beginning of commentary, as it used to be when you had something called radio commentators, the commentary itself would have given you the description for the sport, and you wouldn't have to create specialized rooms for persons. Now, there are some persons with disability that requires the quiet room, the specialized room. And sorry, Rangers and Celtics, I'm an Arsenal fan, right? And I know at Arsenal, there is a room you can go, and it's a quiet room. The crowd now is a shot. And that's good for some persons. But a lot of persons who go who are visually impaired, they want to feel the ambience of the crowd. They want to be part of it. And they want to hear the commentary. The Swiss Association, in 2010, I was at the Football World Cup, and the Swiss Association provided South Africa with some support that provided good commentary for persons right as you sat right in the stadium where you, one of my thrills was sitting very close, because this is now South Africa, not the United Kingdom, and the ball literally hit the fence less than 3 feet in front of me. Now, I was thrilled. But my point is, we do not have to create specialized things all the time if we did universal design. And coming through all of the discussion yesterday, when we spoke of the Google equipment with cameras, when we spoke of, I'll take her off so she doesn't answer me when I speak, Meta. When I speak to Meta, when we spoke about Meta and using the equipment, we spoke of universal design. We spoke of equipment that others can use, that everybody can use, and it gave everybody fair play to the market. And I think one of the things I spoke of also was the cost of specialized equipment or specialized services. Because if we did our service, if we did make specialized glasses for visually impaired, they might be outstanding, but how many of us can afford it? And I'm from a developing country, so I always think of the persons from developing countries. One of the commitments we made to the world in 2015 in the 2030 agenda is to leave no one behind. We can only do that if we provided services that we can, as much as possible, all afford. The affordability of specialized services is so much more difficult for most of us. Again, as I said yesterday, again, many of us who can afford some of the equipment we use can only do so because it's subsidized by government. And I know some of this sounds very, very strong, but it's very true. And we have to think about how we can make equipment effective and efficient, and yet that we do not give the producer the excuse to say it's not enough, the market is too small. If we can make it for everyone and make it usable and effective so for persons who are visually impaired, we can solve some of the problems. So I continue to argue for universal design, and I continue to argue for the participation of the end user from the ground, so that you do not have to think of retrofitting. I know it is more expensive to rehabilitate a home than to build it than to be engaged from the very beginning. Within the last few years, I went back to Antigua, and I was rehabilitating my parents' home. And I said at the end to my sister, it would have cost me less if I had broken the damn thing down and built a new one. And it would have, because it is retrofitting everything and rehabilitating the thing. It's a lot more expensive. And we have to think in that way. One of the things we in the blindness sector have to take on in new thinking is that the cake is now being shared by a larger group of people, because we no longer have the dominant control of the disability sector, and we have to include more people. As you would see, some of the agencies that work with us all work with a number of other disability agencies, and it is important that we argue for universal inclusion, we argue for universal design, and we argue to bring everybody along with us, while yet recognizing our special needs, and that our needs can fit into a universal design. So it's a balance. It's a difficult argument and balance. But all of the things I have heard over the last 2 days can fit into the universal model. And I argue for that model, that we give serious consideration as we transform our societies. We spoke a lot about the power of AI. One of the things that is really interesting is when people ask you about AI, they do not begin to ask how powerful an opportunity this new tool will bring, how transformative, even more so, I believe, than technology in itself, the internet technology, which began the transformation 30 or 40 years ago for us. AI, most people speak of it's danger, it's bad. Don't you think it's bad? I had an interview with some people, and all of the questions were, don't you think AI, what about the ethical things? And I always turned my answer to say, there is great possibility, great hope, but yes, of course, there is potential danger. And so there is. But I think the power that AI promises has to be given overwhelming opportunities for us, because our entire lives, as we know it now, can be transformed in 5 years, 10 years, by this tool called AI. How we use it, we can use AI now to read. I can sit in my chair as I was, and I can say to my tool, and I'm not advertising, but I can say to Meta, what's on the screen? And she'll tell me, and if I'm not happy, I can say, tell me more. I could not do that a year ago, 2 years ago. I would have to have some. In fact, when I didn't have my Meta on, my colleague was asking me, do you know what's on the screen? And I fell into the old model. No, could you tell me? No, I can read the screen now. And that is a power that I did not have before. I went down to the dot technology. And again, using that technology, I can read a signature. I can have my kid sign his name, her name. I can sign my own name, and I have a little 5-year-old granddaughter, 4-year-old, and I signed my name, and she said, but you can't write, granddad. Now I could look at it and I know I can't write. and it is the power that it gives me, the power that I have to be able to explore my world for myself. It's very, very transformative
to the way I envisage the world today. And that's what we've been talking about for the last 2 days. And that's the future we have before us, whether it's public health or sports, academia or employment in education or in services to our older citizens. Whatever the world is, what the world was yesterday will not be by 2030. We have promised in the fulfillment of the 2030 agenda, we have promised to leave no one behind. And technology, AI, and technology in general gives us that hope. And I mean us, persons who are blind and partially sighted and persons with disability, it gives us some hope that we can achieve some of the objectives that we seek for inclusion and equality that we ask for and aim for in the 2030 agenda to leave no one behind. I urge RNIB to be even stronger advocates for the inclusive design models, stronger advocates to work with their governments on regulation that will allow access to these tools that will change and transform the lives of many people, of the millions. There are over a billion persons with some form of visual disorder that will require some form of technology. It doesn't have to be the highest level of technology, even a pair of glasses. There are nearly and do you know that eye health disease is the one of the fastest growing health challenges that we face today, and because of significant improvement in ophthalmic care and eye health services, and we have to address these. We can create more opportunities for education and employment for children who are visually impaired and children with various forms of disability if we can release the power of technology and AI in a positive way, in the transformative way that we hold in our hands going forward. Let us do this together. Let us not do this as an afterthought. Let us work in unity, in a collaboration between the innovator, the developer, and the end users, working step by step from innovation to transformation as we work to make this world a better place and a far more accessible place for all of us. Thank you.